The United States military has until January to open all combat positions to women. This more than 2 years after then Defense Secretary Leon Panetta ordered the change. The Army, Navy, and Air Force are all poised to do so, but a top official with the Marines is recommending exempting some jobs from the requirement. The debate is heating up over this issue, and we will discuss the plan and the controversy over having women in combat. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, September 23rd. A 9-month Marine study of all male and mixed gender units also recently found differences in the effectiveness and safety of those units. But some are questioning the validity of the study. So we will get our guest to respond. She is a full advocate of full integration of women in combat positions, and we will welcome your questions and your views on this too. Should women be allowed in all roles in the military, or should the Marine Corps be granted an exemption for certain positions? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ellen Herring, a retired Army colonel and program director of the Combat Integration Initiative at Women in International Security. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being with us. So the Marines are reportedly wanting women to be excluded from certain frontline jobs. This is despite that January deadline for all military services to end restrictions on what jobs women can do. What is going on here? Why does the Marine Corps get to, object to this at this late date?
Well, the Marine Corps has been the only service that has been pretty determined not to allow women into combat occupations. And this is their last ditch attempt to get an exclusion for their service. None of the other services are asking for an exemption, and they've in fact indicated that they have no intention of keeping anything closed to women. The Marine Corps has always been very traditional, somewhat conservative, and has had to be pushed forward into making these kinds of changes. They had to be pushed into the removal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell earlier. Combat cockpits had to be forced to open combat cockpits to women, and now this is this similar story here.
What about this study performed by the Marine Corps, which was released earlier this month, that found male-only units were both more effective, less likely to suffer injuries or fatalities than mixed-gender units?
Yeah, so I've been looking at this study for almost a year. In fact, I was actually invited in by the Marine Corps last summer to Quantico to sit down with the team that was developing this study and hear their plan. And shortly after I visited them and observed what they were planning on doing, I wrote a series of articles that challenged the methodology that they were using. And the problem with the methodology was that they were bringing new women who had never been in these occupations. They were training them, putting them through the school. And by the way, they were able to meet the entry-level requirements of the schools. And then they were putting them into this experimental task force with men who had actually been qualified for some time in many cases in these occupational specialties. And then they were, rather than comparing their capabilities against a set minimum standard, they were really just comparing groups that included women with the all-male teams. And so the male teams typically had more training and more experience. And frankly, I'm surprised that the male teams weren't more effective in 100% of the tasks that they were assigned. The report says that they were only more effective in 69% of the tasks that the mixed gender teams were competing with them against. And so it was a competition. It wasn't really, can mixed gender teams meet minimum qualification requirements? It was, how do they stack up against these all male teams that have quite a bit of experience? And so to me, the study was flawed from beginning to end.
Yeah, and you wrote more than a year ago that the methods the Marines planned to use to measure the performance of women were likely to be unfair. What would have been a better way to study this issue?
Well, what they should have done was establish their minimum qualification standards, and they still haven't actually told us, did the mixed gender teams meet minimum qualification standards? If they did, and it was simply a matter of they weren't as good as these trained all-male teams, well, then the mixed gender teams were still solidly performing combat teams. And they haven't revealed, none of that's revealed in this study. It's just a comparison. So that would have been one way to do it. The other way would have been to a control group. It would have been perhaps an external Marine combat unit that is qualified. What does this qualified unit look like? And then what is a unit, in this case it was a task force that included women, are they as capable as an external Marine Corps unit that doesn't know that they're in some kind of competition or evaluation with another unit? So compare. It really, the whole thing was flawed because it became a competition between men and women. And the women were less well-trained than the men.
Now, the Navy Secretary Ray, is it Mabus?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He is the service secretary for the Marine Corps. He blasted this study. He said it was biased. And he said that he plans to open all jobs to women. However, some Congress members are backing the Marines. U.S. Representative Duncan Hunter, a former Marine member of the House Armed Services Committee, has sent a letter to the Defense Secretary calling for Mabus' resignation. So this is heating up.
Right. Yeah, I saw Secretary Mabus was on, I think it was PBS NewsHour last night, and he was talking about the difference in perspectives between himself and the Marine Corps Commandant. And I think he did a good job explaining why he found that the study was flawed and that he wasn't willing to accept basically what I've just outlined for you. Well, and what he talked about further was this problem with averages. So that was the other thing that you see in the study is they're averaging women's capabilities. And they're revealing that, women are not quite as strong as men. I don't think anybody doubted that. And it didn't take a Marine Corps study to tell us that. But as Secretary Mabus said, this isn't about average women or even average men. It's about highly capable women and men. And what he says, and I've been a long proponent for, is set your standards. Men or women, whoever can meet those standards, can apply for those positions or can serve in those positions. And that was Secretary Mabus's point. That's the point that I've been, harping on for 3 years now. And I hope that's what they do.
Yeah. Well, what would be the big deal if certain positions in the Marine Corps were not open to women?
Well, so there's a lot. Women join the Marine Corps for the same reason that men do. They're interested in being kind of at the tip of the spear. They want to serve in the most forward-based occupations that are available. So excluding women from that opportunity is, well, it does two things. It harms the Marine Corps because it reduces a pool of potential applicants, and it also harms women's potential service in the Marine Corps because those are the type of positions from which we draw our most senior leaders, both enlisted and officer. So you're kind of hampering women's careers, but you're also hampering the Marine Corps' opportunity to draw on an entirely large demographic.
Yeah, so what do you say to maybe the few who would say hampering women's careers is nothing compared to the possibility that a male or any Marine Corps member might be killed because of this?
Well, it's like I said, go back to standards, set your standards. If a woman meets those standards, I fail to see how she's going to risk a male comrade beside her if she's met the same standards.
Yeah. What positions, by the way, are we talking about here? Do you have any idea what positions?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. It's all the infantry, most of the artillery, all of the armor, all of the amphibious vehicles. It's a pretty significant percentage of the Marine Corps in terms of gross numbers.
We are talking with Ellen Herring. She is a retired Army colonel and program director of the Combat Integration Initiative at Women in International Security. We are discussing the role of women in combat and the renewed controversy over women in combat. The U.S. Military has until January to open all combat positions to women, but now reportedly the Marine Corps is balking and recommending exempting some jobs from this requirement. What do you think? What questions do you have? We'd especially be interested in hearing from you if you are a veteran or a military service member. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. A new study is raising some concerns about integrating women into military combat positions. The Marine Corps is preparing to ask that some positions remain open only to men, following a study that found units with women did not perform as well in combat. But others are questioning the validity of that study, including our guest, which found male-only units were more effective and less likely to suffer injuries or fatalities than mixed-gender units. We are discussing this issue and welcoming your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ellen Herring, a retired Army colonel, program director of the Combat Integration Initiative at Women in International Security. Peter on Facebook says, I have two concerns. The first is going to be fixed by having position-specific physical fitness requirements. The second is that young women surrounded by and commanded by young men inevitably receive special treatment, which will hurt the mission. Well, Colonel Herring, what do you make of that? The first concern being that we should just have position-specific physical fitness requirements.
Well, absolutely. That's what I've long advocated for, and I think that's what the services are moving to. Certainly, that's what the Army has done. The Army has just gone very scientifically through each of their occupational specialties, and they've tried to establish a baseline level of physical requirement, and they're opening the occupations sequentially to women who can meet those baseline qualification standards, well, men and women who can meet those. So, yes, I agree 100%. As to whether or not young women will be treated preferentially, you know, that's really up to their commanders. I would call that poor training if there are, in fact, commanders who give women preferential treatment. It's not the fault of the women that they might be treated differently. However, there's not a woman that I know in the military, Army or Marine Corps, that has asked for preferential treatment. In fact, we just want to be treated the same as our male counterparts. So if there's a problem with the dynamic, that needs to be addressed by the leadership.
Yeah, are there, I don't know, any other objections? There are some objections, I think, about women just having different hygiene needs, maybe needing separate facilities for sleeping. Are these valid concerns?
So we've been at war for more than 10 years, and we've deployed women in very, very austere and remote environments with all male teams. It hasn't been a problem so far. In fact, this summer we conducted a study with 25 women who participated with the special operations community as members of cultural support teams. They lived in extremely remote, austere environments in Afghanistan, and the separation was simply sometimes just a poncho liner or just their sleeping bag, which they changed inside of. So we have been doing this now for a long time, and what is the different hygiene need for women? I mean, we like showers just like men do, but oftentimes we don't get them any more often than the men do.
The Air Force, the Navy, the Army have all said they don't plan to ask for any exemptions of the requirement to allow women in combat positions. What makes the Marines different?
What does make the Marines different? Well, they would say there's a lot of things that make them different. They're special. They're unique. They think they're the most lethal fighting force. However, from my perspective, I think they're more conservative, more traditional, and just, frankly, less willing to embrace change.
We are talking with Ellen Herring, a retired Army colonel, about the controversy that is emerging with the Marines planning on asking for exemptions to the order to integrate all combat positions in the U.S. military to women. What do you make of this, and what questions do you have? Do you think that women should be allowed in all roles in the military, including combat, or should the Marine Corps be granted an exemption for certain positions? What role should women play in the military? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We would love to hear from you if you are a veteran or a military service member. What do you make of the objections from the Marines to opening military combat positions to women? We welcome your thoughts and questions. Jim called and says, since we know the study was poorly designed, we should design a better, non-biased test to be sure that women can do as well as men in combat. So, Colonel Herring, Jim says, let's do another study to make sure.
So I don't think another study is going to reveal anything differently, because let's put it this way, that maybe isn't the case, but this is just a delaying tactic to say, let's do study after study after study. Why do we need another study to set occupational standards? Why is it a requirement to figure out what the Army has done, which is set the occupational standards based on scientific methods and then let men and women compete for jobs? We don't need a study. The Army hasn't said we need a study to compare how women and men do against each other on averages. So I'm just, you know, another study to me is just a delaying tactic.
Yeah. What about the concern that if there are standards, that just the whole integration of women into combat positions will lower standards?
I haven't, I'm not really sure what you're describing there.
If we're going to have position-specific physical fitness requirements, that those physical fitness requirements are going to be lowered in order to allow women to meet them.
Well, that's exactly what the Army's tried to do, is not lower standards, simply to establish valid standards. So I'm not sure why it would automatically lower a standard just by setting valid standards.
Right, I'm just asking you about that concern that that's what's going to happen.
Well, so yeah. So there will be people that will never believe that women are capable of doing these jobs. And in fact, it just emerged yesterday in a People magazine article where there's a member of Congress who's calling on the Army to prove that the women just made it through Ranger School, despite the Army's insistence over and over and over again that standards weren't lower. In fact, that these women were held to the highest standards. There are members of Congress, Congressman Russell, a Republican from Oklahoma, who is saying, prove that these women actually met the standards. So I think there's going to be always the naysayers who will doubt that women have ever been able to meet the standards. And I don't know that there's any way to convince those people. We can tell them we didn't change the standards, but they won't believe it.
Let's go to Jordan in Green Bay. Hello, Jordan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
I just had a question, and it was, you continue to use the word allowed to serve in combat, but my question is, when a man enlists, I assume that he may end up assigned to the infantry just out of being in the Army. Are you proposing then that women will have no opportunity to serve in the military without being in combat? Will all women who enlist be obligated to serve in combat? I'll just listen to the answer off the air.
Sure. So I think what he's asking is, will we force women to be in combat units?
Right.
And I think the answer, so here's my position on that. If we're going to force men, then we have to treat women exactly the same way as we treat men. For example, I graduated from West Point, and when we are commissioned, we are often offered branch assignments. But when branches, and it's based on an order of merit list, so some people end up with branches that they don't necessarily want to serve in. Men often get stuck in combat arms branches that they don't necessarily choose. And women have, until now, been allowed the option of choosing any combat support. Actually, not just allowed, but we were only allowed combat service and combat support positions. Now, women could potentially be force branching into a combat occupation. And my answer to that is, if it's good for men, it's good for women. And the real question is, can they serve in those positions? So if you force branch somebody into the infantry, whether it's a man or a woman, it's really, can they do that job? So if you join the Army and you suddenly get force branched infantry, you better step up and perform because you volunteered to join the service in the first place. Now, if we're talking about a draft, again, I think it goes back to capabilities. When we draft people, we have to determine what they're capable of. Are they capable of serving in the infantry or the armor? And men and women equally have to be evaluated along those lines.
Chris on Facebook says, my view is this, let them serve if they want to serve. During World War II, the Russians had women combat pilots. Some were even aces, even some snipers. We've already seen women in harm's way. Tammy Duckworth comes to mind immediately, as well as many others. If they can do the job, let them do it. Just a response to that, Colonel Herring?
So, yeah, the Russians, that's a fascinating case during World War II. And it was almost 1 million Russian women actually served. And many of them served in the very, very front lines. And it's interesting that we have ignored them as an entire population of women that really fought in the very front lines. And it was that we ignored caller said, the aces of World War II when we were considering opening combat cockpits to women. Somehow or another, we managed to ignore that these Russian women had already done what we were challenging our women couldn't do. So, yeah, there's a lot of history of women who have already done these types of jobs, but we've conveniently ignored them.
Let's go to Gary in Brookfield. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Jerry. Thanks for taking my call. Nice talking to you again this morning.
Thanks.
Good morning, Colonel. My comment is, it sounds to me like the Secretary of Defense has got to make some changes in the leadership in the Marine Corps. And I would ask, Colonel, why isn't that happening?
Well, that's a good question. I can't speculate on what they're doing in the senior levels of DOD relative to what's going on with this kind of public discord between the Marine Corps and the Navy Secretary. And certainly the Marine Corps seems to be out of step with the other services. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic in the next few months because General Dunford is set to become the new chairman. And yet he is leading the one service that is out of step with this Secretary of Defense. So, good question. I mean, I'm not sure why we want a new CJCS who is completely 180 out on this move forward.
Yeah, help us understand the Navy Secretary Ray Mabus is the one who said he plans to open all jobs to women. He is the service secretary to the Marine Corps. So the Marines are technically under the Navy. Is that what's going on here?
That's right. And to me, this is kind of, this is really shocking in some ways. It's kind of mutinous for the Marine Corps to say, we're not going to do this. And we are challenging the Navy Secretary, who is their civilian leader. And I haven't seen any of the media question the idea that here we've got the military, you know, we're subordinate to our civilian politically appointed leaders. And here we've got the Marine Corps very publicly challenging our civilian leadership. I think that's a problem.
Yeah, the Marines are saying that Mabus threw them under the bus. And then we have some, like I mentioned earlier, some Congress members backing I guess the Marines as opposed to MABUS. So there's a lot of conflict going on over this.
Exactly. And it's not just MABUS, it's also the Secretary of Defense. So the Marine Corps has challenged not just their service secretary, but the Secretary of Defense decision, which said, figure out how to integrate women. Instead, they've said, we don't think that's a good idea, and we're going to tell you why we don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, can anyone point to the benefits to the military, including the Marines, of putting women in combat positions?
Yeah. So, in fact, I would really love to see the rest of this study. You know, they released only a four-page summary, which seemed to me to cherry-pick data. And one of the data points that made me question the study was that these mixed-gender teams were only outperformed in 69% of this very specific subset of tasks. So my question is, what were they not outperformed in? 31%, it appears that they were either equal or exceeded the all-male teams. What did they exceed the all-male teams in? But it also gets to diversity in terms of our organizations that are more diverse capable. And what we've seen in study after study after study is the more diverse an organization is, the smarter they are, frankly. They call it collective intelligence. And we believe that adding women will make the organizations more collectively intelligent and better decision makers, better problem solvers. And I believe that I've heard from Marines that were familiar with the study that, in fact, that's what the Marine Corps did see, that in complex problem solving, the mixed gender teams were better. So if you just set your standards in terms of physical standards, you bring in highly qualified, physically fit women, and then you add them to these teams, will you raise the collective intelligence of these combat units? I believe that you will. And I think that that's what we'll see as this plays out.
Let's go to Ryan in Hill Point. Hello, Ryan.
Hi, Joy. I'm a huge fan of the show there. I'm a former Marine. I served two tours in the Helmand Province. My thought on it is that we keep talking about the physical attributes of women, and that's really not the issue at hand. I believe that putting young men, you know, living in the middle of nowhere with a few women is a huge distraction to the mission at hand. I just wonder what your guest comment is on that.
It's not whether they can do the job, but that men will be romantically interested in these women. Is that what you mean, Ryan?
That's where I'm kind of going with it. I think young men would be, I just think it would be a huge distraction to the mission at hand.
All right, so that it'll be a distraction that way, Colonel Herring, according to Ryan. What do you say to that?
So there's been a lot of discussion, they call it sexual tension, that when you mix young men and young women together, that you'll have this dynamic of sexual tensions will develop. And yeah, that's a consideration. In fact, when we did our study this summer with the women that were part of the cultural support teams, they said, yes, that was a very real, not problem, but an experience that they had, that definitely existed. But the women who said that it didn't become a problem were women who said they had strong leaders and good role models within the organization. So, sure, men and women mixing it up in remote, austere environments, in any kind of environment, that sexual tension is likely to develop. However, how the organization handles that is what is critical to whether or not if it impacts mission effectiveness. So, you know, it always goes back to the same thing, which is leadership. Good leaders make good units despite any kind of interactions, negative or positive, between unit members.
We are talking with Colonel Ellen Herring. She's a retired Army colonel, program director of the Combat Integration Initiative at Women in International Security. And we are talking about the issue of women in combat and welcoming your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest who is an advocate of full integration of women in combat. And we are talking about a current controversy where the Marine Corps is reportedly asking that women be excluded from certain frontline jobs. The Marine Corps is pointing to a 9-month study performed by the Marine Corps, which was released earlier this month, that found male-only units were both more effective and less likely to suffer injuries or fatalities than mixed-gender units. But others, many others, are pointing to flaws in that study, saying that, questioning the validity of that study. And we are welcoming your questions and your views. Do you think that women should be allowed in all roles in the military, or do you think that the Marine Corps should be granted an exemption for certain combat positions? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ellen Herring, a retired Army colonel and a program director of the Combat Integration Initiative at Women in International Security. Before we take more calls, Colonel Herring, what has your experience as a retired colonel tell you about women in combat? Why should women be in combat, in your opinion?
Well, I think it makes us a more effective fighting force, frankly. I think that the reason that this has even bubbled to the surface now is that since 9/11, we've been using women in more and more expanded roles, and we've been using them there because we needed them, frankly. It wasn't just that we needed additional bodies. It was that women provided, in certain instances, capabilities that all male units didn't have. So we've created a number of special, we call them enablers in the Army, but like female engagement teams, the lioness teams, the cultural support teams. These were all women teams that we then assigned to combat units because they didn't have the capabilities that these women brought to the teams. So, you know, it's interesting to me that we are able to assign women to these combat units on a pretty extended basis and do so successfully. And yet now we want to debate whether or not women can be infantrymen or special forces officers. You know, we've done this already, and it's now time to say, okay, women can actually serve in these positions, the actual occupations, not just be attached to these units for temporary missions.
Yeah. Any thoughts on how this issue is similar or different from the don't ask, don't tell or gays serving in the military?
Well, from my perspective, it's not any different. It really has to do with cultural change and the way we view people. However, there will be many naysayers will say, oh, no. It's very different because men are men, even if they're gay men. They have the physical attributes of other men. And it doesn't create the same kind of potential unit dynamic or sexual tension that women do. So there will be naysayers that will say it's very different. I would say that those are excuses.
Yeah. Don on Facebook says, I agree with your guest. And then he adds, should women have to register for the draft?
Absolutely. You know, I think this is, I can't believe we still have a draft that is separating, and it's not really a draft, it's selective service. Mm-hmm. So at 18, young men have to register for selective service, and if you don't, you're punished in a number of different ways. I happen to have two sons and a daughter. Both of my sons had to register for the draft, and my daughter, the only one of my three children who served in the military, was forbidden from registering. Men and women are equal citizens, and they should be equally responsible for the defense of this country. Why it falls on the shoulder of only my sons and not my daughter is that's a very peculiar situation to me, and I think we need to remedy that. Well, Congress has to remedy that, and they need to do it quickly.
Yeah. Let's go to Steve in Rice Lake. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead with your thought or question.
The conversation is good. I appreciate the guests. I am associated with military, and I've watched certain things develop, and I can't speak on a broad spectrum like Colonel can, but I'll say that standards sometimes between men and women are different, just as in requirements, physical requirements in fire departments and other agencies where physical strength is requirement. There are allowances. If you're sitting in front of Google, you can just Google United States Army APFT test, and you will see that the standards for women is sometimes far below half of what the requirements are for men. And I've observed and witnessed as women advance in the military, some of them have the physical stamina to advance and endure, but a lot of them, they physically break. Legs, they have problems with their feet, they have problems with their shoulders, and then they fall into the category where they're on disability.
Yeah, well, Steve, hold on. Let me get Colonel Herring to respond to that. If I heard that correctly, he was saying that the standards for men and women are much different right now,
What he was referring to is a general fitness test that men and women are required to take semi-annually in the Army, and I believe semi-annually also in the Marine Corps. These are general fitness tests. And they're not just different for men and women. They're also different by age category. So an older man has to be much less fit than a younger man. And like I said, these are general fitness tests. They are not occupational standards. So occupational standards and general fitness tests are very different. And what we've not done in the past is establish occupational standards. We've simply had these general fitness tests, and the assumption is because women's standards are by and large easier to achieve than male standards, that women are less capable. But I always have to point to this fitness test standard changes by age for men as well. So this notion that just because women are different, why do we change those fitness standards by age for men?
Education of the job requirements for the older men change also. The other thing that I've observed, and some of your callers have made this quite clear, there is a fear right now within the military that if you don't think, talk, and act in a particular way, then you're not going to advance your career. Some of your callers have made it clear that if they don't comply with, you know, the idea of conforming to inclusion of all, then that leadership shouldn't advance. And that's another thing that leaders really, there's kind of an attitude among several leaders, like, why am I going to speak out and make things, you know, make objections to things because it's only going to derail my career.
All right, and I'm sorry because we are running short on time. His phone kind of cut off, but he said that as a man advances in age, the job requirements also advance or change.
Sure. They may or they may not. It depends on whether or not he's promoted. You know, it depends on whether or not he becomes a command sergeant major or he remains an E5 sergeant. An E5 sergeant's doing the same job he was doing, virtually the same job as at the entry level. He made one more point too about the inability to speak out on this topic.
Right.
Well, we are a conformist organization. I mean, when you join the military, you know that you are giving up many of your individual rights, and you're conforming to the institutional norms. And one of the institutional norms that we have is that we are subordinate to our civilian leadership, and that must remain that way. If military senior leaders want to challenge our political leaders, there's a problem there.
Let's go to Chris in Watertown next. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I have deployed as a infantryman in an all-male unit and in the support role in a co-ed unit, and I will say emphatically that there are more discipline problems and less effectiveness directly related to the behavior of the women in the co-ed unit. Even though we had West Point trained leadership, it was a night and day difference. And as a corporal in the infantry and then as a sergeant in support role, most of my administrative time was dealt with, had to deal with behavioral issues when I was deployed in a co-ed unit, whereas almost none in an all-male unit. It was mission-focused. I think it is a tremendous distraction.
Yeah, so what kind of behavioral problems? Very briefly, Chris.
One instance, we had one female that we had to continually go and find in different male barracks.
Are we talking the sexual tension issue again?
Yes.
All right. Colonel Herring?
Well, he alluded to the point here, which is about leadership. And he said, you know, we had good leaders, and despite having good leaders, we still had these problems. And I will tell you that in every unit in the Army, in the Marine Corps, and across the military, you're going to have leadership challenges, whether the unit's integrated or not. I would beg to differ that it's any less in an all-male unit than it is in a gender-integrated unit. Of course, my only experience has been with gender-integrated units because, you know, I didn't have the option to be in an all-male unit. But every unit I've ever been in, there have been leadership challenges in how people interact, whether it's women interacting with women or men interacting with men or vice or across the genders. These are people problems that exist in every organization. It's certainly in the police force. It's certainly in the fire department. And we work it out.
Yeah. In our final minute, Colonel Herring, how do you expect this issue with the Marines will resolve?
I think that the Marines are going to be forced to integrate, and they're going to do it kicking and screaming. But I think that once the Marine Corps decides they're going to do something, they do it wholeheartedly, and I think they do it well. Frankly, they did a pretty good job doing but lifting Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They were the first service, I think, that stepped up and actually actively recruited gays to serve in the Marine Corps. So once they get behind something, they really go after it. It's just that they're dragging their feet at getting behind this, but I think they will eventually.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah.
Ellen Herring is a retired Army colonel and program director of the Combat Integration Initiative at Women in International Security. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production. Thanks for listening. I hope you stay tuned. We have a big question on the Wisconsin retirement system coming up in our next hour. Tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about decluttering and downsizing in our homes. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.